collection of days, pavilioned in splendor and girded with praise.
Now can you hear me? There we go. All right. Well, today is March 29th. And if you do not know that, this is a special day because it is the birthday of my second daughter, Thea. She is now 5 years old today. So you can go ahead and type in the comments. You can wish her a happy birthday as well. It's also Joseph Sutton's birthday as well. They share, two awesome people share the same birthday. So happy birthday, Thea, and happy birthday, Joey. Well, you can go ahead and turn to Mark chapter 5. That's where we will be in this morning. But I want to share with you, this was a couple of years ago. We were at the Dallas Summer Days Parade, Summerfest, whatever they call it. We were ready. My parents were down. We had our lawn chairs, and we had our spot claimed. We had a little canopy so we wouldn't get sunburnt, and we were hunkered down. We were ready for the parade. My girls were excited. They were just dancing around, super eager to go get the candy. I was super eager to eat their candy. So it's this great relationship we get. They get the candy. I get to eat the, you know, Tootsie Rolls and the good stuff, you know, that's not for them. So, but we're sitting there, and it's just this fun day. My parents had come down from Washington just to hang out with us for the weekend. And I remember sitting there, and here we are, just having a great time. And I remember looking at my mom, and she gets this email. And her face just drops. The email contained news that my grandma's cancer was back. That it was worse than we thought. That it was terminal. And all of a sudden, what was supposed to be a fun day where we had just lots of candy and celebrating and enjoying our time together, soon our whole day, our whole weekend began to revolve around this fear, this anxiety of what's going to happen to grandma. That began to dominate our talks, our conversations, was what was going on with our grandma. And see, this is the reality that we face, is that sometimes we come across situations that are just dire, and they cause us fear and anxiety. We all have experienced those things, whether it's disease or death or just difficult circumstances where we enter into them, and they captivate everything. They're the center of our focus, and we begin to be filled with fear because we have no control. We see this playing out with this COVID-19 as it's dominating conversations, as it's dominating every sphere of life, this anxiety, this fear over the sickness and the fallout from everything else that is happening. Well, today we're going to talk about this. How can we have faith when things seem impossible? How can we have faith in difficult times? And we're going to look at a story in the Bible, in the book of Mark, and we're going to look at how Jesus shows us that we can have faith even in the most difficult times. We're going to look at this in three ways. We're going to look at the problem, then we're going to look at the solution, and then lastly, we'll look at the application. So three points here: problem, solution, application. Kids and students, if you got a piece of paper and pen and you're ready to draw, I challenge you to draw, you know, three sections in your piece of paper and draw out that first point, the second point, draw that out, and the third point. And if you want to post them on our Facebook page afterwards, I would love to see your drawings. And you can show me in your drawings, be creative and show me, hey, man, what is this Bible passage all about? So we'll dive in. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and lived." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him as they went. We see Jairus, and in this story we see the problem. The problem is this fearful reality of disease, death, and difficult circumstances. The problem that we face is the fearful reality of disease, death, and difficult circumstances. See, Jairus was desperately seeking help for his dying daughter. Jairus was this respected religious leader, and he comes, he sees Jesus, and he falls desperately at the feet of Jesus. His actions were demonstrating this real need and sincerity as he approached Jesus. His daughter was at the point of death. His daughter was dying. Literally, this means she was at the point of death. The clock was ticking on her life. And Jairus comes, and he desperately pleads for Jesus to come and heal her so that she might live. Jairus knows that Jesus can help, but yet you see the reality of the situation. He sees the reality of his daughter's situation. And Jairus is gripped by fearful reality of his daughter's impending death unless Jesus does something about it. See, the reality is that disaster and devastation make us prone to fear and anxiety. Like the reality that we face of disease, death, and difficult times, it causes us anxiety. It causes us fear. See, we live in a fallen world that is broken because of sin and its effect on creation. That all through history, we see the effects because of the fall with Adam and Eve when they sinned against God. And we live in a fallen, sinful, broken world, and things are not as God created them to be. And we're continually confronted with the reality of disaster. And it's inescapability. We can't escape these things because it's the world that we live in. We see this going on with COVID-19. We see its devastation on lives. How it can cause this fear and anxiety over our health, over our well-being. Sometimes that leads to people going out to the stores and stocking up on a room full of toilet paper. So that when I go to the grocery store, I can't find toilet paper. But it leads us to this fear and an anxiety. Or maybe you're like me with this COVID-19. Maybe you're afraid that the grocery stores are going to close. And you're going to have to go out and hunt for your own food. And maybe you're like me. You don't even know where Doritos live. Like, what are we going to do? But jokes aside, it creates this real anxiety and fear in us. This uncertainty of the economy, of our livelihood, of our jobs, of our future, they cause us to worry. And we fear hearing the C word, cancer, because of the fear that it invokes. The disaster that comes from it, we fear. We're full of anxiety when we realize in these situations with disease, with death, with the difficult circumstances that we have no control. That there's no hope to change them. We feel powerless. And it creates this fear and an anxiety in us. When we are gripped by the fearful reality of the world that we live in, and we feel hopeless and powerless, we need to go by faith to the one full of power and hope. We see this with Jairus, that as he's wrestling with this fearful reality, that this incident takes place in front of him as a call to have faith in Jesus. So we pick back up in verse 24. Jesus is going with Jairus on the way, and there's a huge crowd just pressing all around Jesus. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. See, this woman we're going to see is a powerful example of faith that Jairus sees plays out in front of her. She has this devastating condition that affected her total life. Physically, she was suffering from this uncontrolled bleeding that had these consequences on the rest of her life. Spiritually, it was affecting her because she was ceremonially unclean, and that meant she was not allowed to go into the temple section for women to pray. Was affecting her emotionally. There was no hope. There was no hope of getting better, no matter how hard she tried. Emotionally, this was weighing heavy on her. Socially, this was affecting her. That she had to go around, she was an outcast who had to go around and announce, "I'm unclean. I'm unclean. I'm unclean," so that people could avoid her. This led to her being a social outcast. And it affected her financially as well. She had spent everything she had on doctors trying to get help, and yet she came up empty. This outcast woman, though, is a powerful example to this respected religious leader. See, she came to Jesus courageously. She had to fight through the crowds where she was a social outcast, and she would have faced scorn if people would have known about her condition and that they touched her. Yet she came boldly to Jesus. She came and she touched Jesus' cloak, trusting that he had the power to heal her. Her faith, we see verse 27. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and thought and touched his cloak because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. Her faith led to her immediate healing from Jesus. And Jesus responds, verse 31, at once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" And I think Jesus says this with a smile on his face, you know, and as this crowd is pressing around at his disciples, you're like, "You see the people crowding around against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, who touched me? I had 15 people just touching me. Jesus, how can you ask this question?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. We see here Jesus, he's desiring to establish a relationship with the person of faith. Jesus realizes that power from him, this is literally power from him, had gone out because of someone's faith. This power from him, this shows us, it's going out from him because of who he is. This power has gone out from him because he is fully God. And in this passage, we see this picture of Jesus being fully God and yet fully man. That he in him has the full power of God and yet has relinquished his right to use some of his powers, like his all-knowing power, so that he can come and be a fully man, fully God, perfect substitute for us to reconcile us back to God. Now, he may have even known who this woman was. He may have even known, but yet he was just seeking to lead her to a confession of faith. He was not content, though, with a miracle. He wanted to establish a relationship. Jesus wants her to know the healer, not just the healing. See, in the Gospels, we see this time and time again, that miracle leads to meeting. Experiencing Jesus' power leads to experiencing Jesus personally. This woman's faith was the means by which she experienced Jesus' power. I want you to look here, verse 32. But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." See, the woman's faith was the means by which she experienced Jesus' power. The woman experienced not only physical healing, but spiritual salvation. You see this? He addresses her as daughter. She's no longer this social outcast, but now she is welcomed into the family of God. She is now a daughter of God. He says, go in peace. And this peace is not this absence of conflict. No, this is a wholeness because of a right relationship with God. She was now in a right relationship with God and had this peace, this wholeness, because of her faith. Her faith was the means by which she experienced Jesus' power. See, I want you to see this. The power of faith comes not from the woman, but from the person in which it is placed. The power of her faith, the power of our faith, is not in us. It's not in the amount of faith we have. It's not in how worthy we are, but it is in the person in which it is placed. Our power resides in the power of Jesus. And Mark is wanting us to see this. Look at the power of faith because of Jesus. And I want you to skip down with me to verse 6. And I want you to see, as Mark's trying to paint this picture of the power of faith and the powerlessness of unfaith. And he points to this passage, and he follows up in Mark chapter 6 about the powerful consequences of unbelief at Jesus' hometown. Chapter 6, verse 1. Jesus left there and went home to his hometown accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. "Where did this man get these things?" they asked. "What's this wisdom that has been given to him? What are these remarkable miracles he is performing?" They questioned. This unbelief in Jesus' hometown, despite his teaching and his miracles, they didn't believe that he could have been from God because of his simple origins. They're asking these insulting questions. "Isn't this Jesus, the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son?" Which back then, to address somebody as the son of their mother, that was a derogatory insult. And so they're insulting Jesus. "Isn't this Mary's son? That's Mary's son." They felt like he was one of them. "We know his brothers and sisters. Isn't this a carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? We know them. They live here in our town." And they took offense at him. They felt like he was one of them. He couldn't be the Messiah. He was so fully man and fully God that they were wrestling with this. How can he be the Messiah? He's a man just like us. They took offense and rejected him because of their unbelief and their lack of faith. And Jesus responds in verse 4. And he said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his own hometown, among his relatives and in his own home. He could not do any miracles there except to lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them." He was amazed at their lack of faith. This unbelief was restricting the power of Jesus being demonstrated in their lives. But Jesus it says here, right? Like, he could not do any miracles there. Like, the power of Jesus was restricted in his hometown? What? I mean, like, Jesus has just got done, if we're looking at Mark, he's just got done showing his power over the wind and waves, and when he calmed the storm. And then just before our passage, he heals a man who's demon-possessed and shows his power over even demons. And then we see him heal this woman with this disease, showing that he has power over disease. And we're going to see here in a second how Jesus shows he has power even over death. And yet we see here in Mark 6, as his following up Jesus' four stories of his power, like, he couldn't do any miracles. What? That's not because Jesus was inferior or that he was overcome by their unfaith. But I want you to see this. It's because their lack of faith did not permit him to do any miracles, did not permit him to display his power to them. Jesus' power is not limited. Jesus' power knows no limits, but his purpose was to do miracles in the presence of faith. He will not force his power on those who reject him with unbelief. Jesus' primary purpose isn't to impress people. He wants people to believe in him, to trust in him, to follow him. We see this, that unbelief is restricting the power of Jesus because of they're missing out on seeing Jesus' power being demonstrated in their life. And Mark is showing this contrast of the power of faith versus the powerlessness of unfaith. And he's trying to paint this picture. If you know anything about African Impalas, which you probably know as much as I do, but I saw this and it was kind of interesting. That an African Impala can jump to a height of 10 feet, almost as high as me. Just kidding, I can't jump that high. I'm white and short. But African Impalas, they can jump to a height of 10 feet, and they can jump to a distance of 30 feet. Yet if you go to a zoo, they are kept in an enclosure with a 3-foot wall. Because the thing about Impalas, if they can't see where their feet will land, they won't jump. And this is that similar picture of faith, is that faith empowers us to leap into life of following Jesus despite the circumstances, despite the unknown, because we trust that he is in control of all things. Yet when we are gripped by fear because we don't know what the future holds, because we don't have any control over it, it holds us back, it traps us in our fear, and hinders us from experiencing God's work in and through us. But faith allows us to jump into the unknown, to trust God, and to continue to follow after him, even when we don't know what the future holds. This is Mark's goal in his book, is to get us to see, man, this is Jesus. Do you believe in him? This is the whole story of Mark, as he's trying to build this picture of what it means to follow Jesus, who is the Son of God, who came and died on the cross for our sins, so that we can be restored back to God into a right relationship with him, that we can have peace with God, that things can be made right. And Mark, all through the book, is saying, hey, this is who Jesus is. Will you follow him? Do you trust him? And even in Mark 16, it ends abruptly with these women running away from the tomb, and it says they're astonished. It ends pretty abruptly in Mark chapter 16. Oh, sorry, hang on here. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. And he ends there and he leaves it on this cliffhanger saying, man, do you believe in Jesus? What is your response? These women just saw the resurrection. They saw that Jesus is back now. Will they believe? Will they follow him? And Mark is writing to his audience saying, man, do you believe? Do you trust in Him? Will you follow Him with your whole life? So we see the problem, the fearful reality of disease and death. We see the solution, this fearless, powerful faith. That's our solution, a fearless, powerful faith. Then let's look at an application here. We're called to have a fearless faith in difficult circumstances. Let's pick back up with Jairus here. Verse 35, there we go. Jesus just got done saying, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." And verse 35, while Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, saying, "Your daughter is dead." They said, "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Jairus has just gotten done seeing this woman trust in Jesus. We're going to see Jairus' call to fearless faith. See, the delay caused by this woman that resulted in the death of his daughter was an intense test to Jairus' faith. I mean, as Jairus hears Jesus saying the words, "Daughter, your faith has healed you," in the other here, he is hearing somebody from his house coming and saying, "Your daughter is dead." I mean, just imagine the emotions, the fear, the just anxiety and just the crippling sorrow in Jairus as he hears those words. But yet, Jesus' example of healing this woman was this call for Jairus to believe. Jesus responds to Jairus, right? Verse 36, overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Like he's telling him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Like the antidote to fear is faith. Both of these are present commands. He's basically saying, stop fearing, keep believing. Jesus looking at him in the eyes and saying, stop fearing, keep believing. Take your eyes off the circumstances and put them on me. It's this continual process of, this is the reality that as we live in a world that is full of disease, of death, of difficult times, it's this continual process that we're continually saying, man, I'm not going to be captivated by fear, but I'm going to be trusting in you. And it's this continual process of letting go of fear and trusting in Jesus. It's not this one-time act, but this continual process of trusting in Jesus. Verse 37, he did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, and the brother of James. And I just see Jesus just walking with Jairus and just putting his arm around him and saying, just believe, as they walked towards his house. And as they come, he believed that Jesus could heal, but now he was being told to believe that Jesus could restore his lifeless daughter. And as they come up to the house, the unbelief and the cries of the crowd once again were another test for Jairus' faith. Verse 38, when they came to the home of the synagogue leaders, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. They didn't believe in Jesus and his power. See, these are our professional mourners who were brought in to express the deep state of grief of the family. This was a cultural practice where you bring in professional mourners. I mean, how many of you guys plan on bringing in professional mourners at your funeral? Like, wouldn't that just make funerals just completely, just, I can't even imagine, just, I don't know, maybe I should hire some for my funeral, like, you know, some professional mourners come in and grieve me. But just this cultural thing where they're just wailing and crying, and yet Jesus is like, man, no, her death is not final. It's not irrevocable. but they reject Jesus' claim. They don't believe in Jesus' power, and their unbelief ends up shutting them out from witnessing Jesus' power. Do you see this? They laughed at him. Verse 40. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him, and they went into where the child was. The unbelief shut them out from experiencing and witnessing Jesus' power, Jesus' work. The faith of Jairus, the daughter's mom, and these disciples allowed them to witness Jesus' power. They go in. It says in verse 41 that Jesus took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kohum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Jesus demonstrated his power as he commanded the girl to stand up. And immediately, just like with the woman and her condition, immediately the little girl got up and was brought back to life. She was returned to life, but this wasn't the resurrection body like we will experience someday. She was still subject to death. And so Jesus says, give her something to eat. In verse 34, she still has needs. Her body is still subject to death. But Jesus here, as he brings her back to life, I want you to see this, that Jesus, this whole story, he's filled with compassion, but even here, he cares about the little girl's little needs, not just her big needs. Like, Jesus cares about your big needs and your little deeds because Jesus, that is who he is. And he is at work in the big things and the small things to continually show you his power and presence at work in your life. As followers of Jesus, we are called to have a fearless faith in difficult circumstances. As followers of Jesus, we're called to have a fearless faith even in difficult circumstances. We will face disease. We'll face death. We will face difficult times. For some of you, you're in those times already, and it's a challenge. And as we look at this passage and see Jesus' power over disease, over death, over difficult circumstances, it's important to see that this passage isn't about Jesus' promise to overturn every disease over death. There's no promise that Jesus will always overturn a disease, always prevent death. That the promise here is that Jesus will always lead us to see the power of God in our lives. This passage is about the fearless, the powerful faith of the disciple, of the follower of Jesus, as they trust in his ability to handle every circumstance. The followers of Jesus are called to a fearless and a powerful faith because Jesus is able to handle every situation we face. I want to share a story about a couple of missionaries and their fearless faith that resulted in Jesus being glorified in difficult circumstances. They followed Jesus fearlessly and trusted him even in difficult circumstances. You may have heard of Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. Elizabeth Elliot and her husband Jim were passionate about taking the gospel to the ends of the earth. And they went down to Ecuador to take the gospel to people who have never heard of the gospel of Jesus, of what he has done through his life, death, and resurrection to restore us back to Jesus, and how by believing in him, they could have peace with God. Nancy, Jim Elliott and his buddies, they were working in Ecuador, but there was this new tribe that they were completely isolated. It was a violent tribe that they were hoping to build contact with the hope of sharing the gospel. And Jim Elliott and a couple of his buddies, they ended up flying in. And as they were trying to reach these people, they ended up being speared to death. And you can watch this story in the book End of the Spear, which I highly recommend, or you can read the book End of the Spear. If you're looking for something to do over these next weeks, check out that movie, check out that book. But they're killed. And Elizabeth Elliot was faced with these difficult circumstances. Yet she continued to trust in Jesus. She stayed in Ecuador with her 10-month-old daughter because she trusted in God's goodness, in His greatness, in His glory, and in His grace, even through her despair and loss. She had a fearless faith in following Jesus, even in her despair and loss. And something happened that was incredibly powerful, is that she ended up a few years later, after she had met some people from this tribe, some ladies, and had learned the language, they ended up going back to this tribe that had murdered her husband and their friends, and they shared the gospel, and that tribe repented and trusted in Jesus, and reconciliation was made, and lives were healed, and there was just this awesome display of God's power as Elizabeth Elliot trusted in God even in difficult times, and she saw this people group come to know Jesus because she trusted in Him despite the difficult times. She witnessed a miracle, a tribe coming to accept Jesus because of her fearless faith in Jesus. She trusted in Him. The reality is that we live in a world full of disease, of death, and difficult circumstances. But when we have to look to Jesus, we have to have a fearless faith in Him regardless of the difficult circumstances. And when we do that, we will witness His power, His love, His grace work in ways that will cause our fearful hearts to worship King Jesus, because we know that He is in control of all things, that He holds power over all things. And when you are confronted with fear, in these coming weeks, as you're confronted with fear, with COVID-19 or with your job or with whatever it is, come back to this passage and see the power of Jesus and that call to fearlessly trust in Him and watch Him work powerfully in and through you, because He cares, He loves you, and wants to draw you into this faith and show you that He is worthy of your trust. Look for Him to work powerfully in the circumstances, as He will draw you into a deeper awe of His grace, of His goodness, and of His glory. Father, we just come before You. I thank You for Your power. I thank You that You are worthy of our trust, that You are worthy of all things. I pray that You would lead us into this kind of faith, that we would continually see Your power, that You are not threatened by anything, that You hold all things in Your hand, and despite the circumstances, that we would trust in You. And when we see You work in powerful ways in us and through us, Father, I thank You for Jesus and His work on the cross. That You desire a relationship with us. Continue just to draw us into that relationship with You. We pray these things in Your name. Amen.